All right, everybody, let's go ahead and pick up. This is week two of Lead On. We're talking about leadership. And last week, we kicked off by reading you a passage of Scripture out of 2 Timothy 2:15. Do your best to present yourself to God as one approved, a worker who does not need to be ashamed and correctly handles the word of truth. And I made this comment to you that whether you are in a quote-unquote official leadership position or not, there is an arena that you all have influence in. And we took some time last week and we had all these phrases on the board of what leadership is, kind of defining it. And realize or recognize that if it doesn't matter whether you might be consider yourself a stay-at-home mom, you have leadership and influence over a certain group of people. If you're owning a business and you are a corporate executive, you have leadership responsibility of a group of people. If you are influencing a small group of people, if you find yourself in different environments, you are leading in some way. We talked about the fact that leadership is a spiritual gift, and so there's probably a level of giftedness that we could talk about there, but this is not about that. This is about learning to lead and learning leadership skills and the way that we kind of pour our life into others and influence others. And so last week, I kind of gave you a behind the scenes. This is some things that just happen around here, some things that we try to do. I shared with you James 3:1, which is a verse that I take very seriously. It says, "Not many of you should become teachers, my fellow believers, because you know that you who teach will be judged more strictly." Who wants to be a teacher then? Because, you know, who wants to stand before God with a little bit more accountability? Like we don't have enough. And so we talked last week about the DNA here and some principles we lead by here. The last one we talked about is details matter. So, and I made the statement last week as we were wrapping up that the toughest person to lead is yourself. The toughest person to lead is yourself. And so that's what we're going to pick up this week. Because any leader will tell you that, you know, leadership, anytime you're trying to lead, it can be tough. It's rewarding. But it basically means that you're taking responsibility for a certain set of parameters, circumstances, events, and you are taking that responsibility and making sure that it does happen. Usually it involves, making sure other people get there as well. But the toughest person to lead is you. And if you can't lead you well, you will fail as a leader. I can guarantee it. I don't see any other way around it. Because if you can't lead yourself well, every leadership inadequacy, every leadership shortcoming you have is going to be exposed if you can't lead yourself. And so let me give you a couple of things that will, let me tell you why. I guess that's fair. As leaders, we're our own worst enemies. As Pogo said, we've met the enemy and they are us. One of the reasons that we have a hard time leading ourselves is simply this. We don't see ourselves as we see others. We don't see ourselves as we see others. Human nature seems to allow us the amazing ability to size up everybody in the world except ourselves. And as a result, you know, it is that man in the mirror principle. You need to be able to look at yourself realistically, understand your personal difficulties, your weaknesses, be honest with who you are. It's the first principle to adding depth to your life. Are you willing to be honest with God about yourself? If you're going to be a great leader, you've got to be honest about who you are. Know what it is that you do, where you struggle. Know what it is that really excites you. Know what it is that doesn't excite you. And be able to kind of take an honest look at yourself, because we don't see ourselves as we see others. And until you're able to look at yourself honestly, you won't be able to lead as effectively as you could lead. And you just got to come to grips with that. The second reason that we struggle is that we're harder on others than we are ourselves. We tend to have two totally different sets of criteria for judging others and then ourselves. We judge others according to their actions, what they do. We tend to judge ourselves based on our intentions. Which brings us back to the principle we always use here. Direction, not intention, gets you to your destination. But if Barbara tells me she's going to do something and she doesn't do it, I'm going to judge that based on the actions. She just didn't get it done. Now, she'll say to me, well, Jeff, I intended to get it done. Yeah, but you didn't. So you screwed up. However, when I'm thinking about myself as a leader, I intended to get that done. I was just so busy, though, because, again, I know all the reasons it didn't happen. And so I'll give myself a pass because my intentions were correct. Remember, as a leader, one of the things we have trouble with sometimes is that we're harder on others than we are ourselves. And often we have to take a closer look at ourselves and make sure that directionally we're pointed in the right direction or we will struggle. Okay? And so let me give you some keys to leading yourself, and then we're going to get into some other stuff, but we'll get this out of the way, and then it's not as painful to do the rest. If you're going to be good at leading yourself, there are a couple of things. I'm not sure how many are on the list. The first one is this. If you're going to be a good leader, you've got to learn fellowship. You've got to learn fellowship. Bishop Fulton Sheen once said, civilization is always in danger when those who have never learned to obey are given the right to command. Okay? Only a leader who knows how to follow will be able to lead well. Spiritually, that's true, right? Spiritually, if you're a follower of Jesus Christ, you are then positioned to be what is a servant leader. And so, I always say that the best leaders are the best followers. One of the reasons that people struggle as leaders is they try to lead and they never will get a follow. And if you're not a good follower, here's what I do know about you. You won't be a good leader. Got it. If you can't get the following down, you won't get the leading right. And so, you have to remember what it's like to follow. You have to become a good follower. For me, I mean, I love those environments that I get to walk into where I'm not in charge of something and I don't have to lead it. Now, I will tell you, I will sit in the back of the room and I will watch and I have to really work hard to turn off that leadership switch. Because one of the things I do is I like to lead. And if you ask me to, I will normally step up and do it. But boy, I can sit in the back of the room and watch something unfold, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is a train wreck, and the train's going off the track, and people are going to die. And I mean, you watch that, but then you have to decide, you know, but it's not my job to fix it. Because my role today is to follow. And we'll let you do it. Well, I worked for a pastor years ago, Jim Hammack, and some of you know Jim. And Jim was great because I had worked for one pastor who was very, he was kind of a dictator. And so he was very dictatorial in his approach to leadership, and he was really tough to work with. And I worked with him and love him, but I'm glad I don't work for him anymore. And but Jim was wildly refreshing. Jim was a guy, and he told me the first day I came, he goes, here's my promise to you. I'll be here 1 year. And after that, all bets are off. And I'm like, why did you tell me that? He goes, I promise I make to any staff member. I'm not gonna leave you out to dry. I promise because you're here, I'll stay at least a year. Now he stayed longer than that. But he also walked in a year later and said, it has been 1 year. All bets are off, you're on your own. On the anniversary day, that's how we celebrated our anniversaries at Longwood. Jim would walk in the office and say, you've been here a year. I don't have to stay anymore. Thank goodness. You know, and he would just walk out the door, you know. And what's wrong with you? But he also said this, and he meant it. And it is a principle that I have tried to use with our staff here, and of course, Leanne can tell you what I have or haven't. But Jim would often look at me when I was getting ready to do something. He'd go, I will give you all the rope you want. He said, now you may hang yourself with that rope, and I'll stay out of your way. He goes, and I promise I will cut you out of the tree, but I will let you hang. And I mean, and you know what? He meant it. I could do about anything. And I always knew he would cut me out of the tree, but it didn't mean I wasn't going to hang there a while. I mean, he would leave me hanging for a little bit. And one of the reasons is because Jim just wouldn't step in if it wasn't his role. And that's difficult to do, by the way. That's hard to do. And so you have to learn to be a good follower. You have to learn fellowship. The second thing that has to happen if you're going to learn to lead yourself is you have to develop self-discipline. That's fun, isn't it? It said one day that Frederick the Great of Prussia was walking the outskirts of Berlin, and he encountered a very old man walking toward him, ramrod straight in the opposite direction. Frederick stopped him and said, "Who are you?" And the man said, "I am a king." And Frederick said, "A king? Over what kingdom do you reign?" He said, "Over myself." Each of you are a king or a queen or a ruler of your own life. You really are. Now, you can give it to Jesus and let him take the job, which you ought to do, but you don't have to. That's the way this whole thing is set up. But we're responsible for our actions and decisions. No one else is. Even though we want to blame others all the time, to make consistently good decisions, to take the right action when needed, to refrain from wrong action, requires character and self-discipline. Character is something that happens spiritually. We talked about it. It's a fruit of the Spirit in your life. You develop that fruit, you grow that fruit, character emerges. Character is a part of your walk. Hopefully you're getting better at that. That's required for self-discipline. If you don't have it, you will not be able to lead effectively. King Solomon once said, "The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender." And you have to decide whether you're going to be the one who is in charge of who you are and who's going to rule your life, or are you going to let somebody else do it? And in your world, you make a decision, I think, as a follower of Jesus Christ, to give him the lordship of your life and make ourselves captive of him. And that puts us on the road to leading effectively and developing the character that we need. But that self-discipline that comes along, and that is not an easy thing. And that is an ongoing kind of thing. And leaders get in trouble when they don't do that. The third thing that you have to do if you're going to lead yourself well is simply this. You have to practice patience. Leaders, most leaders in general, and this is a general statement, but it's a pretty broad statement, but I think it works, they tend to be impatient. Especially leaders with a little bit of a vision. They look ahead, they think ahead, they want to move ahead. And that can be good. 1, 2, 3 steps ahead, good thing. 50 steps ahead means you're walking by yourself. And so for a leader, there is a fine line, a fine balance of the speed to move and the need to move. There's a balance between the speed to move and the need to move. Few worthwhile things come quickly. And there's no such thing as instant greatness or instant maturity. We like instant oatmeal. We like coffee in less than a minute from our K-cup. We like microwave popcorn. But becoming a leader does not happen overnight. And you don't lead overnight. And you don't get the ability to lead overnight. And you don't get people where they need to go overnight. I always say it this way. We lead in a crock pot, not a microwave. In other words, leadership is more of a long-term, let it simmer, let it cook, let it happen. And you earn credibility, and you earn the ability to move a certain way, and you learn the ability to do things. Now, that doesn't mean you're not going to make microwave decisions. There are some times that you have to make some instant decisions on the fly, and hopefully everything we've talked about at this point falls into place. Your character's in place. You see things clearly. You're able to do things. But for the most part, leadership is a long-term moment. It's a vision. There's something that you're chasing. There's a future that you're moving toward. And if you're not moving toward that, then you're not really doing very much. I made the statement last week. I stand by it. You know, if a leader doesn't have a vision or some direction they're going, they're not leading anymore. And they're not really qualified to take you anywhere. I mean, why would you follow them, right? And so leaders need to remember that the point of leading is not to cross the finish line first. Most leaders I know can cross the finish line first and alone if they wanted to. But that's not good leadership. Leadership is getting everybody that you're responsible for to the finish line. And sometimes that takes longer than you want it to. Sometimes a leader can see where you're supposed to be, but it just takes time to get everybody else there to get there with you. There's a balance. You just can't run too far ahead. You got to find that that place to do it. You've got to give it time. You got to move slow. And that, for me, that is one of the constant struggles for me as a leader. I want things done yesterday. I want them done faster than they happen. I hate to wait. And so patience is not, you know, I mean, you're supposed to have it. I don't like it. And so I work with it. But you have to recognize that you got to give it time. Most of you know I'm a basketball fan. I look at leadership a lot of time like coaching. One of the principles that I hold on to that's a real, real true truism when it comes to coaching is simply this. You have to coach the team you have, not the team that you want. And until you coach the team you have, you can't make them the team that you want. And it's a lot of time for leaders, they get in trouble because they're trying to coach the team they want. Every day, as I pray, I thank God for the people of 434 because that is the team that God has given me to be coach of. Now, I think it's a great team, to be honest with you. I think we do some incredible things. But I also know that if we're going to be better tomorrow than we are today, then something else has to happen. We have to continue to grow. We have to continue to become. And so for leaders, you have to understand that one of the goals is you've got to figure out how each individual works. On an individual basis as a leader, I have to figure out how you work. And then you have to figure out how I work, and we have to figure out how to work together. And sometimes that works good, sometimes that doesn't. And there's been people in your life, and you know, you've clashed with them. It just hasn't worked out. It hasn't worked out right. But you know, if you've ever tried to follow somebody that didn't understand you, then they didn't lead you the right way, oh my gosh, you know the difficulty of that. You know, I was one of those guys as an athlete that, you know, you could climb my case. You could get in my face. You could holler at me. If you could get me mad, you could motivate me. What's the problem with that? And I never took it personal. If you're a coach, you know, you could call me every name in the book. You could question my parents' heritage. You could tell me what you wanted me to do. You could kick me off the team. You could do whatever you wanted to do. I would respond to that. And I would respond defiantly to that. And I would step up with one goal, to prove you wrong. And when my coaches, and they figured that out about me, by the way. They all seem to figure that out. So if you were to see me compete in different arenas, you would have thought, oh my gosh, this guy is a pain to coach and he hates his coaches. No, I love those guys. They made me better. We got along great. Yeah, we really did. It was just a matter of figuring out how to do it. But boy, I tell you what, though, in today's world, holy mackerel, you yell at a snowflake, they melt. I mean, if we don't give out a participation trophy, we don't play anymore. Holy mackerel. I mean, so you've got to figure out how it works. I mean, we were talking before it started about the Kentucky basketball game yesterday. You know, on the whole way up to that game yesterday, as we watched it, one of the things that was buzzing, because, you know, I wanted to give Markel the full college basketball experience. I'm trying to prep him for college when it comes. And so I made him listen to the University of Kentucky app so you could hear all the pregame show, the John Calipari show. You could hear all the things that were going up to it. And, I mean, and the big talk was the fact that Kentucky did not bring the point guard to Florida. That's the quarterback of the team. This kid is a point guard. His name is Ashton Hagans. He is supposed to be one of the top 20 NBA draft picks this next year. Probably will be. He's great. He is a great ball player. He can shoot. He can dribble. He can control the floor. He made one mistake last week. He decided to yell back at his head coach during a loss against Tennessee in Rupp Arena. Now, this kid is a superstar. He really is. You'll hear his name, and if you're an NBA fan, you'll hear his name for years to come. And his head coach looked at him and said, you're probably going to be a number one draft pick in the NBA, but guess who's not going to Florida this week? You. Why don't you take a few personal days and you figure out what you want to do? So he came to Florida without one of the starters. There were some moments I thought, boy, I wish you'd brought Hagans yesterday. But it was one of those days where, you know, but you do it, and you do it simply because you've got to figure out what works. I promise you, if you watch the game Friday afternoon, I don't know this for a fact, but I almost guarantee the fact, Ashton Hagans will be starting for Kentucky on Friday afternoon, and he will have an incredible SEC tournament and an incredible run in the NCAA tournament. I think the message has been received. I'll bet you it has, because I believe that Cal knows how to coach these 18-year-old kids and get their attention. But no one in this kid's life has ever yelled at him before. No coach had ever benched him because they needed him to win. He was told probably for the first time in his life, we don't need you to win. We'll win without you. And they did. And so yesterday I watched a point guard who's an all-world shooting guard. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, he's running the point. We're never going to survive this thing. And there were some times I thought, we're not going to survive it. But the, you know, you only have to have the lead one time. At the end of the game, baby. And so in the last 17 seconds yesterday, my day got a lot better, and the ride home was a lot more fun. The next thing I would say, if you're going to lead yourself well, is seek connection. Seek connection. People who lead themselves know something that's important. They can't trust themselves. And what I mean by that is you have to understand that if you're leading and there's no one in your world that speaks into your world, if there's no one that's talking to you, if you're not talking to people and connected to people, you will get yourself into trouble. I can think of leaders right now, and I can probably name five of them on one hand, you know, with each finger, that basically they're having a hard time leading right now because they have managed to isolate themselves and surround themselves with people who only say yes to them. And they are struggling. And they may not survive the situations they're in as a leader. It's that bad. Because if you don't have people that you can use as a check and balance in your world, that can look in your world and have the freedom to have the relationship with you, to speak into your world, it's not mean. It's just that you might want to call it accountability, but whatever you want to call it, it's that level of, you know, there's got to be dialogue and conversation going back and forth. You've got to have that connection. If you're leading by yourself, you're very disconnected and you can become very isolated. And if everyone around you is just agreeing with you all the time, then, you know, you're in a mess. I mean, you know, again, our staff here and our little microcosm here, you can look at it, and they'll tell you, we will have colorful conversations behind these closed doors. Staff meetings are freewheeling, you know, bounce off the wall, you know, anything goes, and anything can be said. It's okay. And that can happen in this room. And sometimes we don't always agree. And sometimes they don't always agree with one another. And in my job as a coach is to make sure that we walk out, is to be dad and make sure when we're done that we're at least on enough of the same page to move forward and help them understand why we're going to move forward as we are and what we're going to do next.
Love me enough to tell me the truth, even if it's no.
Yeah, true. Mm-hmm. You know, now, we'll walk out the door and we'll be fine. You know, and we can go to lunch and we'll laugh and we'll cut up and we'll play. But I mean, it is so important you have that kind of people in your life. Some of our board members in this room, they've heard me say it. I don't know what we're doing. This is kind of new for me. What do y'all think? I mean, we start taking the ideas. You know, now I know at the end of the day, it's going to fall back into my lap, and I'm going to stand up and say at some point, you know, on behalf of the board, I need to say this, or the board and I have talked about this. I use them as connection points for me. I mean, they cover my flank, which is great. I need that, and I realize I'm the point guy. So, but by the same token, that really isn't just a statement, though. We do that. We have those kind of discussions. We do that on a regular, ongoing basis. And I can't think of any week during the course of the week, maybe every once in a while it will happen, where, you know, in a world where we are connected via text or email or something, that at some point we don't have some type of dialogue between Sunday to Sunday, even if we're not meeting on midweek. Normally we do. There's something going on. And that's just normal. You have to be connected. And you know what? For a leader to be disconnected in this culture is crazy. Because in some ways we're overconnected. And so great leaders will figure out how to use that and how to make that work to their advantage and use it as the tool that it is, not the distraction that it can become. And so we have to learn to be willing to do that, and we have to learn to seek advice, take advice, and not be afraid. When Harry Truman was thrust into the presidency after the death of Franklin Roosevelt, Sam Rayburn gave him some fatherly advice. He said, "From here on out, you're going to have lots of people around you. They'll try to put a wall around you, and they'll cut you off from any ideas but theirs. They'll tell you what a great man you are, Harry, but you and I both know you ain't. Love that story. So true. But when a leader can't respect himself, the people won't respect him either. And so you have to understand that you're going to have to lead and lead effectively, and you've got to be able to come to grips with the fact that you, although you may be a leader and a person of influence, that does not make you God, even with a little g. It means that you are still just like everybody else, and you've got to come to grips with that controlling self, crucifying self, allowing that to happen. Okay? So let me stop, because I'm going to shift gears, because we still got time. Questions about that? Toughest person to lead is yourself. Told you why. Told you how to work on that. Thoughts, comments, testimonies, confessions.
I had a comment on the Kentucky game. Okay,
we're not living. What's wrong with you? You lost. You lost. Your team lost by a point. Go ahead.
No, but the team that won, though, I think it was just as important for them to realize that they could do it without him.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Yeah.
You know, that it showed a lot about them of how to step up. And even when you're 18 points down, that's a huge comeback.
I know.
And it won, right?
I know.
So, I mean,
it was exhausting.
Yeah.
As a fan. Yes, it was exhausting.
I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think it's, you know, and it helps him realize, oh, they won without
yeah.
me.
And again, part of that whole, part of, I mean, and again, you know, basketball can be like life, and I don't want to talk about basketball all day, but I will. A couple other things happened. One, the guy who has emerged for them as a leader this year is a guy by the name of Nick Richards. You don't need to know that. But he was one of the freshmen that came, as they often do at Kentucky, with the anticipation that he will be going out to the NBA the next year. And he put his name as eligible for the NBA draft, and when he took an evaluation of where he sat down with his coach, they talked about his value, he decided, you know what, it is worth it to me to come back to school for a year, learn more, let Coach Cal work with me, my stock will go up as an NBA player, and I will emerge more. So Nick Richards has come back as the leader. And I mean, boy, I'm glad he's back. He's incredible. I mean, the difference between this year and last year is phenomenal. Richards is probably averaging 17, 18 points a game, maybe the SEC player of the year when it's done, don't know. Yesterday in the first half, oh my gosh, you thought his mother must tie his shoes. I mean, he dribbled off his foot, down his leg. I'm like, oh my gosh, what is wrong with this guy? He looks like he's never touched a basketball. He had 2 points in the first half. I mean, Florida was just making him look crazy. At halftime, again, according to the reports that have emerged from the locker room, Coach Cal walks in the locker room and looks at him and says, Nick, I'm not sure you can play any worse, and you're horrible. He said, but you have been our guy all year, and we're going to keep going to you. So you either can be the player you're supposed to be and step up, or we're going to keep going to you, and we're going to get beat today by 30 points, and it's up to you because we're coming to you. Nick Richards had 17 points, I think, in the second half yesterday. And he came out of the locker room like a different guy. And freshmen who hadn't played all year all of a sudden started shooting the lights out in the gym. And it was awesome because, again, we were down 18 points with, 6, 7, 8 minutes to play. I mean, it was bad. And all of a sudden, here they came. But, again, learning that you can do what you're supposed to do and learning what your role is and learning to take your job and learning not to panic. Just a crazy, crazy day. But anyway, it's a very good point. The team found out that they didn't need him and they could win without him. They're that good.
He needed those words of encouragement.
Yes.
You suck.
Every player is different, right? Every player is different.
Yeah, all those people were encouragement constantly. Yeah.
So all those people in your life who have ripped you and torn your backside up, they were just trying to help you. You know, just thank God for them. Anything else?
I've experienced that it's like you when you're younger and you're going along and you know, maybe leadership stressed upon you, or you say, I'm going to do this or whatever. You think you're doing a pretty good job, and then somebody rips you up, and you're going, oh, crap, nobody else wanted to do this, and now you're criticizing me everything I did when you wanted the job done and nobody else would do it.
Sure.
And but it's hard to take that as a learning thing. And then when you get closer to 70 and you're going, oh, my goodness, that's what was going on. And I found myself lately going, God, why did it take so long? Am I that thick-headed?
Oh,
as he moves over.
Yeah, one of the most startling revelations I remember as a younger leader was having that realization one day, oh my gosh, everybody doesn't agree with me.
Yeah, right.
Or I'm wrong.
I hadn't gotten there yet. I was
wrong.
The first step is everyone doesn't agree with me. Then you get to, oh, I could be wrong. Oh, I was wrong about that. And then you figure out how to come back and fix it. Yeah. Very true.
Well, like I said, to me, it was like, and it was usually a dinner or a meeting or something, and a group wanted to do this thing, but they're all looking around the room, nobody wanted to do it. So then I go, well, if no one else wants to do it, I'll do it. And then I think it comes off pretty well. And then somebody later at a meeting goes, well, this went wrong, this went wrong, this went wrong. And you're going, what? That's humbling. It's hard.
Sure is. Well, I didn't understand it when I heard it. So I just kind of filed it, and now it makes a lot more sense to me. I had a leader tell me one time, wise, experienced leader, say, you know what? I'm sure in half the situations I've been leading, half of what I did was wrong. Problem is, at the time, I didn't know which half. You know, and what that simply says is, you know, you're not trying to do anything wrong as a leader, if you're a young leader, or a leader in general. Hopefully, well, if you're a leader, you're not going out to try to do anything wrong. Okay, but by the same token, you know, you have to be in touch enough with yourself to know your role and to know that you do have the risk of being wrong. You know, when someone says, well, you know, I agree with you a lot, but I disagree with you about this. And I always say, well, that's fine. I said, and if you disagree with me, if it's biblical, that's cool. Or I said, or did it ever in your mind that since I'm right so much, I could be right this time too? and again, you know, But there's that moment where, I mean, there's some folks that I agree with a lot, but when I disagree with them, I really have to stop and think that because I trust them. And in my world, there's some good accountability lines. I mean, because again, okay, you know, you're right. Yeah, you are right most of the time. Doesn't mean you're going to be perfect or infallible. I got that. But you know, again, but it does give me pause to go, but okay, so I could be wrong right now. You could be on the money. I could just be thinking weird, you know, and I use that. Really, is really those are bumpers on the pinball machine to kind of keep the ball going where it needs to go. Because we need that. We have to have that. We have to be honest with ourselves and be open to evaluate that. In Area 51, obviously, you know, details matter. So in this room, you know, if you take time to walk around the room, you know, it looks weird and people kind of walk in here and go, what is this? And I love it when people who've never been in here before come in because then they start really looking. They read down on the wall. And then they start looking around at the Area 51 stuff and the Kirk stuff and the X-Files stuff. And then someone goes, that's not Starry, Starry Night. That has a UFO in it. Yeah, I know. Yeah, we put a UFO in it. I mean, you know, and people start looking at it. One of my favorite leadership moments happened in Star Trek. But it was the movie that they used it was called Generations. It was the movie that made the bridge between the original cast and the Next Generation. If you're a Star Trek fan, you'll remember the scene. Captain Kirk, Commander Scott, and Commander Chekov come onto the bridge of the brand new, refurbished Starship Enterprise as guests. Because Admiral Kirk no longer commands a starship. And so he comes on board, and they've got cameras in their faces, and they're filming them, and, you know, And Kirk has never liked being an admiral. He wants to be the captain of a ship. He didn't like the pomp and circumstance. You know, all about that's that Captain Kirk thing. That's the look right there. And He sits in there, and they get in a situation where they're going to go out, and they're just going to go out on a little let's just test a new ship. These are a special guest. The new captain will take the ship out. They're just going to go out on this little run. Well, you know what's going to happen. They go out on this little run. Okay, it's not going to be a little common thing. They're in trouble. They meet this force, this energy field in space that they've never seen before. And so they're sitting there, and they've got them all sitting on these little jump seats on the side of the bridge, watching the captain of the ship make choices and stuff like that. And at every point, the guy's making a decision. William Shatner's character, Captain Kirk, is doing this. He's trying to get up to take over, right? And at one point, Commander Scott leans over to him and says, "Hey, something wrong with your seat there, Captain?" You know, he's just shaking his head like, whew. And finally, the captain looks over at him, and he's made a decision that Kirk knows isn't going to work. And so he looks over at Captain Kirk, or Admiral Kirk, and Kirk goes. And the guy finally says, "Admiral Kirk, do you have any suggestions?" And boom, Kirk is up, and he's up. He's barking out orders, and here they go. But again, it's that moment where you have to understand your role. And you have to understand that there's a moment that you're the leader and there's a moment that you're not going to be the leader. And you got to be able to, willing to sit in that chair, that jump seat, if you will, and watch it unfold and wait for that leader to ask. Because if it's not your job, you can step up, but you may cause a mutiny if you're not careful. Understanding the role, being, and that's why I said, go back to what the very first thing I said, if you're going to be a great leader, you've got to be a good follower. I love it when you get an opportunity to lead good leaders because they will be good followers and they're great resources. There are some leaders that don't like strong personalities. I love strong personalities. To me, they're the most fun to lead. They're the most fun to mess with. They're the most fun to have in the room with you because, again, you know that they understand what you're trying to do from the standpoint of you're trying to get something done and there's an opinions and there's strong wills, but at the same time, you also know that when you trust them to do their job, they're going to do their job. And that's wildly important. And so in the last couple of minutes, let me give you a couple of things, and we'll start this, and we'll continue this in next week. Let me give you some often overlooked practices of great leaders. Often overlooked practices of great leaders. There's probably 100 of them. We'll do 10, 12, I don't know. Well, anyway. But if you're a person of influence, this is something that that you've got to work on. These are skills, if you will, that you've got to develop. The first one is simply this, and there's probably better ways to say it, but great leaders make complex things seem simple. Great leaders make the complex things seem simple. And this is a lot harder than you think. Somebody once said, any fool can make something complicated. It takes a genius to make it simple. Think about E equals MC squared. Simple formula. Most of us don't know what the heck it means. We don't understand the complexities of it at all. But again, it takes the complex, it makes it simple. And great leaders will stick with a problem or idea long enough to engage it deeply enough to clear away the fog and reduce the concept down to its simplest form. Sometimes as a leader, that's what you're doing. Before you're able to communicate to someone else, you're taking what is a complicated, many-tentacled beast, if you will, and you keep working with it till you're so familiar with it, till you can start getting down to the nub of it, where you can say, okay, this is what's really going on. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm not saying that you dumb it down. But you take the concept and you make it accessible for people. That's what you have to do. John Barber does this for me all the time. If John's trying to explain something to me, technically, I don't get it. I don't know what he's talking about. So he has to make it accessible for me. Mark does the same thing. Okay, no. Give me the Jeff version of it. Make this accessible so I can understand it. Because I understand my limitations. I understand that there's some the complexities of it I don't get. I need someone who can take the complexities of it, whittle it down, and make it accessible for me. And usually they say, reboot. I get that. Turn it off, turn it back on. I got that. I can do that. But break it down for me. Don't tell me why I have to reboot it. Don't tell me all that's involved in rebooting, what's going to happen when I reboot. I don't care. Just tell me what to do. Make it accessible so I can do it. So for me, you know, one of the things that happened is, you know, on Sunday mornings, for example, you know, and I was doing it even earlier this morning, you know, looking at what I'm going to say here in the worship event. You know, if I can't take that whole thing that I'm saying and dumb it down and for myself, you know, and break it down to the moment, I do, for me, I dumb it down. I have to dumb it down.
Just let you know.
Yeah. Huh? I do. I have to dumb it down for me. To be able to wrestle through it. Well, I understand. And there's some weeks, I tell you, I look at it and I go, what were you doing? I mean, you have created a complicated mess. You know, I don't understand it sometimes. And I have to come back and I have to rework it and rework it and rework it. And you've got to be able to make it where it can be communicated in just a couple sentences and summarized. Now you say, well, I wish you'd just do the summary so we could go home. I know. You know, I think I used the illustration before. I met a guy who's taken his church through this process of trying to do something crazy and strange and revamp the way that the church is operating. And I asked him to tell me in, you know, under 30 seconds what he's doing. I said, give me your elevator speech. He looked at me like I had a third eye. And I simply said to him, well, if you can't communicate it to me in 30 seconds, then I promise you the people you're trying to lead have no idea what you're trying to do. You know, it is that simple. Now, it didn't make him happy, but I was right. In our world, you've got to be able to make things that are clear enough for other people to follow. And as a leader, you have to do that. And that means that sometimes you're starting with the complex and you're cycling in all the moving pieces. Because you know what? A leader, anybody of influence, understands no one's looking at the complexities of any situation like you are. They don't have to. It's not their job. It's not their role. It's not what they do. So, for all those moments of your life that you looked at someone else and go, well, why don't they just do this? Yeah, that would be good. But maybe what you haven't taken into consideration is all the complexities that they're seeing that they're trying to navigate and get through and try to make it work. And if it's a good leader, they're dealing with that. And sometimes you have to step back and go, you know what? I know I'm only seeing a part of it. What are you trying to do? It happens in business. It happens in ministry. It happens in life. And so you've got to be able to take the complex and make matters seem simple. Second thing. This will be the last thing. Good leaders, great leaders, will fight for clarity. In other words, in leadership, confusion reigns until something is made clear. Okay? Clarity is what brings... clarity is what good leaders, great leaders, will bring to the table. They bring a clarity for what's going on. The best way to get clarity is ask questions. Pull away from it, think through it, pray through it, come back, discuss it more if you need to. Clarity emerges out of the process. Sometimes you have to do the work to let the fog lift, to be able to see what's going on. But clarity doesn't just happen. You have to fight for it. Great leaders are not afraid to roll up their sleeves and fight for it. You've got to fight for clarity. You know, how many times have you seen or heard something and thought to yourself, somebody needs to do something? What that basically means is you're looking at something and there's no clarity. And you've got to figure out what's going on. We live in a day and age where clarity is incredibly difficult. The best version of it right now is the corona. I mean, I don't know if your life, if your world, gets kind of sucked into all of that worry and stuff like that. You know, I mean, I was asking John Barber this morning. He came back from the other coast. You know, you bring anything with you? You know, I mean, it's just one of those things where, you know, we're going to have cases. But again, if you step back and look at the coronavirus, You know, we're looking at something that is far less impactful than the flu. But yet, we got maps online right now. I'll tell you how many cases we've got in every state. You know, we got guidelines that the state of Florida is sending out to schools, to parents, trying to keep them calm. When the realistically though, if you were to get it, let's say you're okay. I mean, let's say that you're a relatively healthy person, that you have an immune system that seems to work pretty well, and for the most part, you know, you're healthy. You can get it, have it. You'll be done with it and move on. This is not the Black Plague.
There's no toilet paper at Costco.
Again.
There's a problem.
I mean, this is not the Black Plague. Now, what does that mean? It means that you've got to be able to fight through the fog of information that's out there and get to the bottom of it and recognize, you know, you can walk into church this morning and you're probably not going to die because you went to church and we were exposed to the corona. Unless you're sitting there, John. I mean, but realistically, I mean, that's what goes on. You know, if you watch the news all day, I mean, watch 24 hours of cable news. You will be terrified to walk outside your house. You will quarantine yourself in your house and wait for it. You'll think that what we have of Crossing America right now is getting ready to be the reincarnation of the Walking Dead. That there's now a virus that's been released and we're all going to be zombies. Right? I mean, that's what we think is going to happen, right? That the CDC is lying to us, that we're really not safe, that they really don't have it under control, that no one's going to have the testing kits. I mean, it's going to be horrible, terrible. You can't go. I mean, you just can't go out.
And then give it 2 weeks and it all goes away.
Yeah. You know, is it bad? Well, if you get it and you're sick and you die, yeah, it's bad.
Or if you're on a cruise ship.
I mean, really?
Yeah, those are the only people who really have a voice.
But the reason it's bad if you get sick and die is because if you don't know Jesus, you're going to hell.
But if you do, it got a lot better quick.
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, but there's so much information out there, and it is so foggy sometimes. You've got to fight for clarity and for common sense. You know, there are pastors in America this morning. I was laughing out loud. I have read so many creative sermon titles this morning of pastors who are preaching on the coronavirus. including the First Baptist Church of Dallas. Including the First Baptist Church of Dallas. Again, you know, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Because, again, it is just... you may get it, and maybe you won't. And if you do, and you're only healthy, and you can survive the flu, you'll probably survive it.
3 or 4 months ago, people probably had it all over the world, thought it was the flu, got better.
I just don't trust China. Anyway, we send it to them, we export it, yeah. But we have to fight for clarity, and you've got to learn to do that in every area. And if you're a leader, especially, you battle for it all the time. All right, we're done. Let's get out of here. Let's pray. Jesus, thank you. Amen. Get out.